You are listening to Sid Weighs In, where Tuck School business professor, associate dean for executive education, and an expert on strategy and leadership, Sidney Finkelstein, shares his views on what leaders are doing, why they are doing it, and whether it makes sense for them and for you.
This is Sidney Finkelstein, and welcome to Sid Weighs In, my podcast on my BBC column, where I have a nice discussion with a guest host who today is Kira O'Brien. Good morning, Kira.
Good morning, Sid. Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be here with you. It's usually at the other end of classroom for me.
So, Kira, what are you up to?
I'm currently a second-year student at the Tuck School of Business and come from media and heading off to consulting after I unfortunately have to leave Tuck in May.
Well, that's pretty cool. We can't entice you to come back as a full-time teaching assistant?
Maybe someday, after I've become CEO. And kind of thinking about that, actually. So I'd love to hear what you have to say about the best CEOs of 2013. So I know you've looked at a couple of them. You've looked at about five and thinking about their kind of leadership effectiveness and also their company's financial performance. I'm just interested to hear what actually inspired you to look at this topic.
Well, Kira, this is actually the first year that I've compiled my list of best CEOs. For a number of years, I've been doing the worst CEOs of the year, which certainly makes me popular in the C-suite. But that's a follow-up and a continuation of my work on executive failure and why smart executives fail. But the reality is there's a lot of very successful CEOs that deserve credit and deserve the shout-out. And so I spent a lot of time with my research team this year to try to get a sense of that. And the result is the top five CEOs of 2013.
Great. Well, we'd love to hear about it.
So the best CEOs of 2013. Well, there are two criteria that I considered. Number one, did the CEO's company experience a significant improvement in performance as indicated by its stock price, cash position, market share, or other key financial metric? And second, does the CEO deserve credit for this success in that he or she actively made decisions or followed strategies that were related to that success? As was the case for worst CEOs, it's important to focus on only those leaders who stood out by virtue of what they did and not because of the general economic conditions in their industry or their sector. So who are the best of 2013? Let's go through the drum roll from fifth to first. Fifth best CEO of the year was Reed Hastings, the CEO of Netflix. And it's really a comeback story. Remember the infamous Quickster debacle when the company announced it would split its DVD by mail business from its emerging broadband streaming business, raising prices in the process? Customers revolted, more than 1 million strong, and Hastings was roundly pilloried in the press. I ranked him, actually, among the worst CEOs of 2011. But what a recovery. It helped that the underlying idea for the shift made sense. Ordering movies by mail is a very analog way to make money. But after apologizing for how Netflix treated customers, Hastings spearheaded a renewed focus on execution and innovation at the billion-dollar company. In classic Silicon Valley style, the massive data Netflix collects on customers, in combination with enormous cloud-based resources, powered by Amazon, actually, has enabled the company to match up availability of videos to customers in different locations based on past viewing patterns. Media companies use technology to deliver content. Netflix has become a technology company that delivers content to customers in new ways. Hastings is aggressively pushing Netflix into global markets, where it often faces local copycat competitors that are unlikely to have the same level of technological sophistication. This powerful growth strategy, when coupled with an innovative culture that is generating original content, like the Emmy-nominated drama House of Cards, helped account for a tripling of Netflix market cap in 2013. Reed Hastings deserves credit for this turnaround and is this year's fifth best CEO of the year. The fourth best CEO of 2013. The world of fashion is always looking for what's new and exciting. This year, we can add to that list of cool the CEO behind one of the most explosive growth stories of 2013, John Idol of Michael Kors. Idol was part of a team, along with Lauren Stroll and Silas Chu, who acquired the Michael Kors business in 2003 when it was generating just $20 million in sales. Despite his incredible talent as a designer, Michael Kors, the man, had been struggling for some time running his business. Enter John Idol. He defined the company's value proposition as runway fashion at accessible prices, a category that placed Michael Kors just below Louis Vuitton's of the world, but above just about everybody else. He repositioned the company to pay particular attention to accessories, handbags, shoes, watches, jewelry, which tend to get less beaten down by discounting. And he created two brands, the flagship Michael Kors that commanded the highest prices and the Michael by Michael Kors brand that brought accessible luxury to a wider audience. this new strategy has really taken off. Revenues are around $3 billion, with $1 billion of that coming from watches. Same-store sales growth hit an unheard of 40%. The number of Michael Kors standalone stores is growing around the world, and the stock is up four times the 2011 IPO price. Idol is something of a postmodern CEO. His management style, being inclusive, fighting against silos, open to debate, creating opportunities for new talent to develop, and avoiding complacency. Taken together, it's almost an unfair battle. A genius designer like Michael Kors and a world-class executive who understands product, customer, strategy, and markets. That combination is not very common in the global fashion business and helps account for why John Idol is the fourth best CEO of 2013. The third best CEO of 2013, Pony Ma, is the founder and CEO of the Chinese internet company Tencent. To say that 2013 has been a good year for him and his firm would be an understatement. The market valuation of Tencent has skyrocketed over $100 billion to Facebook-like levels. The new mobile platform WeChat has almost tripled its active users, 25% of them outside of China, and the company appears to be poised for tremendous growth. What is especially impressive about the leadership of Pony Ma, to me, is the transformation of the once PC-dominated company to a leading player in mobile. 2 years ago, Ma pushed Tencent to develop a new mobile platform from scratch, shifting more than half of the company's 20,000 employees to work on the challenge. Unlike Microsoft, which still really hasn't been able to make the transition, and even Facebook, which just recently got traction in mobile, WeChat is an unqualified winner. The platform enables sharing of text, photos, video, offers live chat, instant messaging, online gaming and entertainment, and recently a payment service to support e-commerce. While there are other competitors, Line in Japan, Kakao in South Korea, WhatsApp in the U.S., the fact that Tencent's WeChat has been able to so quickly leapfrog more specialized companies like Facebook and Twitter is really remarkable. It puts Ma's company in position for global growth, making Tencent a kind of 2.0 company in China, where opportunities outside of the giant home market may eventually rival and even surpass revenue generated from Chinese customers. Pony Ma is also a 2.0 leader, humble enough to admit, quote, "My biggest crisis is that I don't understand what young people like," end quote. Given what he's done at Tencent, that might be a bit of an overstatement. Pony Ma is absolutely one of the best CEOs of the year, the third best in my list for 2013. The second best CEO of 2013 is Akio Toyoda. The grandson of the founder of Toyota, Akio Toyoda started his tenure in 2009 under extremely difficult circumstances. You remember that? Sudden acceleration, product recalls, the global financial crisis, the Japanese tsunami that disrupted the parts supply chain, and a surging yen. He didn't always manage this adversity well, being especially slow to confront the sudden acceleration crisis in the U.S. After finally apologizing to the U.S. Congress in person, he went to work fixing Toyota. Like several other of the best CEOs of the year, Toyota was all about change. Rather than building reliable cars that nobody disliked, he went about trying to sell exciting cars that people loved. So he decided to test drive each new model and provide direct feedback in a very non-traditional manner for a Japanese executive. He appointed Americans to run North America and Latin America, another first. He cut bureaucratic layers and has even taken personal responsibility for the Lexus business. Fighting against bottom-up consensus that is incredibly slow, he's pushed for what he calls fast and flexible decision-making. Mr. Toyota's biggest strategic move may be TNGA, which stands for Toyota New Global Architecture, something that's based on simultaneous development of multiple vehicle models and massive use of common modular components. TNGA has the potential to be a game changer in the automobile industry if it does what it's supposed to do. That is, control costs on a global scale and enable sharing of engineering breakthroughs faster than ever before. Along with all these changes, Akio Toyota can feel pretty good about 2013. Market cap is up over 60%, considerably more than Nissan and Honda. Profits are expected to hit a record $17 billion, and Toyota is on pace to be the first car maker to ever sell 10 million vehicles. And finally, the best CEO of 2013, none other than Jeff Bezos, the founder and impresario at Amazon. This company is in the midst of a super growth cycle fueled by innovation, extraordinary customer focus, and a long-term outlook that is highly unusual in a world of quarterly earnings pressure. Yet Bezos has sold Wall Street on his long-term play, barely booking any net income while watching Amazon's market cap increase by around 50% in 2013. What is Amazon? A cross between UPS, the local library, and a giant warehouse. Bezos has created a company that should be boring but is anything but. Amazon is a cool brand with exceptional low prices, an unusual combination. Walmart only boasts one of these attributes. The Bezos innovation formula is continuous, from selling books to selling just about everything, to creating new products and services like Kindle, Amazon Prime, original content creation, a giant cloud business, and the plumbing behind thousands of e-commerce operations. Amazon is ubiquitous. He is unafraid to experiment and is especially fond of targeting industries wedded to history, which includes much of retail. He seems to have a sixth sense for which businesses are ripe for disruption, one of the most recent being the apparel industry. Bezos deserves credit for building a giant company that is as nimble as a startup. Bezos is that most unusual of business leaders who combine one part entrepreneurship, one part cutthroat competitor, and one part McKinsey-like focus on execution. Like Apple's Steve Jobs before him, Bezos is the one everyone else watches to see what he'll do next. Whether it's promoting drone delivery of packages on the day before Cyber Monday, clearly the PR scoop of the year, or delaying sales tax collection on a state level on online purchases in exchange for completing in-state distribution centers, Bezos and Amazon find new ways to win. The biggest companies are usually the slowest and most vulnerable. Bezos has built Amazon into a giant company that is quicker and smarter than others. Jeff Bezos, the best CEO of 2013.
Thanks, Sid. What a great list. I'm not going to lie, I'm pretty excited to see John Idol on there, given my dedication to my Michael Kors handbag.
So thinking about these leaders, one of the things that really interests me is
at least a good couple years now, but they have a point. Can these guys make it last if they're not around?
You know, being a great CEO, a superstar CEO, means recruiting and developing your successor and your successors. And some of the best CEOs certainly think that way. You look at the bench strength at companies like GE, like Procter & Gamble, IBM, and even GM. Tremendous talent elevating to the top. But yes, it's tough to keep the momentum, and companies like Apple that have just been hitting it out of the park. The problem is not necessarily that Tim Cook is not Steve Jobs. I mean, who really is? But in the history of business, there's no company that keeps on growing, keeps on accelerating, keeps on having a stock price that goes through the roof. There's a limit. There's natural limits. There's ebbs and flows of businesses, and there's new competitors and new disruption and creative destruction, and all those things makes business really exciting. But maybe not if you're in the executive suite, because you got to keep the good stuff going.
So, kind of thinking about that, you know, Apple's known for that interesting, innovative culture. At least it has been for a while. But Toyota, on the other hand, has sort of been known for that amazing operations system, the Toyota production system. But overall, the company's really known for having a very Japanese hierarchical decision-making culture. And you talked a bit about that when you were speaking about Mr. Toyota. But sounds like that's changing a little bit with him. Do you think, though, that that change driven by a CEO might be a little bit overstated? Does there need to be bottom-up change in there, too?
I love what Akiya Toyota is doing here. I mean, he's someone who's taken a very traditional company and a Japanese company at that, and he's also in the family, which are all kind of strikes against you to make any type of big change. And he's trying to rile up the culture, bring in new talent, change how business gets done, and I give him a lot of credit for that. And you know what? He's really going to need to do that, because the German automakers are on the absolute warpath. BMW, Audi, and Mercedes-Benz are just all booming. They're expanding. They're going to lower price points, and they're going head-to-head, and will continue to go head-to-head with not just Lexus, but a lot of the Toyota models. So it's going to be a big challenge. Now, as for whether a CEO can do all these great things, well, you do get on my best CEO list for doing a lot of these great things. But in my experience, when a company is going through, we can call it almost steady state, where business is somewhat as usual, they're in a good position, they continue to execute on plans, the role of the CEO, frankly, is not quite as dynamic or as important. And there are not a lot of CEOs who would like me to say that, because their compensation depends on the belief that they're all absolutely critical. But the reality is, a well-run company can operate without a CEO for periods of time. The problem is when there's big change going on, when there's disruption, when there's new innovations going on, there's major acquisitions, there's new technological changes. And the fact of the matter is, if you look at business on a global basis and the nature of how competitive business is globally and technological change, very few companies have the luxury of being in these kind of steady state environments anymore. So I would say while historically there are periods of time when CEOs really are important and other times when it's about what they've set in place that's really important, we're getting to a stage now, again, because of the changes I just described, where CEOs are going to become more and more important almost on a 24/7 basis. And that's really what the challenge will be. And I'll be curious to see whether companies can continue to develop the right type of talent that can elevate and move up up and down the hierarchy to be able to accomplish what needs to be done in these rapidly changing disruptive industries.
Well, hopefully those of us here at Tuck School of Business can be part of that when we're coming out of our MBA programs. So thanks very much for having me today, Sid.
Thanks for being guest host, Kira.
This has been Sid Wazin. If you would like to comment on this podcast, follow Professor Finkelstein on Twitter @SidFinkelstein, #SidWazin. Thank you for listening.